Do you want to discuss the new Slack icon change for the next hour and a half?
No. He's all right. I don't like the purple. I like the actual glyph that they've changed to. There you go.
I have an opinion, but the fact that people saw problematic imagery within it makes me cautious to voice that I think it looks better on iOS, and the Mac version just needs to have a circle or a tilt to it and not be an iOS, you know, round rack shape.
Yeah, I hate any Mac icon that's a round rect, because it's like...
Yeah, I hate icons with letters in them, because then my mind starts like to read them when there's a bunch together. Like, you know, well, you can just find your own examples, but...
I think half of my own apps have letters on them.
Well, so the new one just like... Although there were a few times today when I went to click on Skype and I'd click on Chrome because like the colors were more recognizable as like what my mind saw as like the Slack colors. And the new Slack icon, like I kind of look at it and I think of like a Hilton hotel or something. I don't know.
I think people are overreacting. Like the general Twitter consensus seems to be that it's terrible. I don't think it's terrible.
Part of it is that I think even in Slack's blog post about their icon change, like they said, you know, you may disagree or you may like hate it, you know, but like, here's what went on for us. One of the best tweets I saw was like, I hope the new icon fixes their memory management problem. But to me, like the issue is that there's an overreaction to like every icon change. So it's hard to know if, you know, how would you recognize an icon going from good to bad and like gauging that based on the reaction to it, because there's always this like giant reaction to an icon change, for better or worse.
And I am glad it's not a white background icon, though. I'll give them that.
Yeah, it's dark purple. I was kidding about that. Though we do have a lot to talk about this week. So the first thing I wanted to mention is a story that you covered, and it's kind of a follow-up to a thing we mentioned in our first episode of the year, where we talked about kind of the iPhone challenges and how Apple could address what they say caused their revenue miss for iPhones, particularly in China. And so tell me about the price change to iPhones in China.
Yeah, so at third-party retailers, we have seen that like the leading resellers, so they're authorized Apple resellers, but it's not Apple stores. And in China, the two big ones are JD.com and Suning, Suning. Mm-hmm. And they have effectively cut the prices of iPhone A, 8 Plus, and 10R by about 20%. Because of, you know, weird taxes and stuff, technically the phones are all still expensive than their US prices. So, like, the 10R has gone down 20%, a reduction of about 17% from its normal price. It was on sale for 6,500 Chinese yen, and now it's sold for 5,399, which is equivalent to about $790. Mm-hmm. And obviously $790 is higher than the 749 retail price in the US, but, you know, taxes and currency conversion stuff, that comes into play. But these aren't carrier deals. It's not like we covered the Japan story a little while ago where it was like subsidized over 2 years. This is just up front, you can buy a phone, and it was 20% cheaper than it was the week before, in China only. And on the back end, it seems like Apple lowered the price that they sold, they wholesaled the phones to enable the retailers to have some more flexibility.
Right.
And clearly, we know the Chinese market is weak at the moment. Price cuts help sustain demand. And it's not like they're currently in any sort of holiday celebration where you would normally expect big discounts. The next thing on like the Chinese calendar is the Chinese New Year, but that doesn't really start like the first week of February, and this was like the second week of January. So clearly it's related to the Chinese sales. But I think I actually said this on the show when we were talking about the investor letter. I said I don't see iPhone price cuts worldwide written, you know, reading between the lines of the letter, but I'm pretty sure I said maybe we'll see some discounting in particular markets like China.
So,
and
yeah,
that's effectively what they've done.
Yep. And so the goal there is that they will sell more iPhones at the new prices than they would have and make more money from that than if they would have stuck to the higher prices before. And you know, it's kind of an experiment, so we'll see how it goes. And
it is believed that those retailers actually sell a lot more than the Apple stores do in that region. So it is more significant. Like, of the Apple Store pricing hasn't changed, and if that did, that would obviously be a huge deal.
Yeah.
But it's still noticeable because these are, like, leading resellers. It's not, like, small little shops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. And also this would contribute not to the numbers that we're going to hear, you know, in a few weeks, but to the following quarter. And, you know, I guess depending on how it goes, like maybe it affects what their guidance that they offer. But
And funnily, because if you discount stuff, then typically you're expecting higher unit sales at lower revenues.
Sure.
But Apple's reporting revenues and not unit sales anymore. So discounts don't quite help their optics on the earnings reports so much.
Interesting. So we'll see what happens there, but it's it felt like I think you're right in that you predicted price changes in certain markets, just not, you know, globally, including the US, because Apple went out of their way in that letter to highlight success in markets that were not China. So okay, and the next thing is part of that we had mentioned, you know, the whole battery replacement issue where you could replace your iPhone battery for $29, and Apple included that as one of the factors that affected fewer iPhone upgrades in the last quarter of the calendar year. And John Gruber has new information. It seems to be, you know, kind of the record in terms of what the number is. But tell me about what he's got on iPhone battery replacements.
Yeah, so Gruber said that he learned from a source who clearly was in the all-hands meeting that Tim Cook held on January the 4th, the day after the investor letter came out, that Cook said iPhone battery replacements for 2018 were between 10 and 11 million, when in a normal year, they would only be 1 to 2 million, which is, you know, quite a significant difference. Clearly, there's a lot of this is because they made the repairs a lot cheaper, but I actually think a big part of it is just that it became so publicized, like not just the price difference, but the fact that you can even get your iPhone battery replaced at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think a lot of people just were not aware that you could even do that. And there was all the calamity with the, you know, battery gate stuff, and it became news stories that your phone's slower and you get your battery changed. Even if they hadn't put the prices, and the prices have gone up, but not to the same level as they were originally. Like, it's like $69 now maximum, whereas before it was $79. But even if they were still at $29, I think if you looked at the 2019 numbers, they would not be so inflated. They would not be at 10 to 11 million again. Like, a lot of this was like a one-time push of people being like, wow, I didn't even get your battery replaced. Oh, this fixes a problem that I might not even be experiencing, but I'll do it because the news is telling me about it. Like,
sure, yeah.
I reckon a decent portion of those 10 to 11 people weren't even being affected by the performance throttling. They just had a slow phone in the before iOS 12 era and were like, well, clearly the headlines are telling me that if I get my battery replaced, then this will fix these problems. And then they get it replaced and it might not have been the core symptom anyway. Like, there's a lot of stuff there where people are like, yeah, I'll just get it replaced for the fun of, you know, almost for the fun of it. It's like, oh, this is something new I haven't done before, and it's cheap, and I can get it done. And so they did. Like, I saw some news outlets report this as Apple sold 10 to 11 million battery replacements, which was 10 times more than they expected to, more than they anticipated, which I don't think is correct. Obviously we weren't in the Cook meeting, but the way that Gruber worded it was not Apple was surprised and overwhelmed by the demand because they made the batteries cheaper. I just think they were doing the historical comparison of in a normal year,
right,
in repair 1 to 2 million, and with the $29 program in place, they did 10 to 11 million.
There were a couple of outlets that put it
as like Apple was blindsided by the fact that so many people came, and, you know, 10 times more people came and got the battery replaced. I don't believe that was the intent of the comment.
I agree, and I think the other thing to take away here is what, you know, kind of where you concluded before too, which is that Apple could look at the numbers all year long and see, oh, we've replaced, you know, 5 million batteries. It's already way higher than usual. And like bake that into the numbers for the end of the quarter on how many iPhones they expected to sell. But it wasn't until it was time for those iPhone owners to upgrade and then didn't that they could really see the effect of all of this. And again, like 11 million battery replacements, like, I guess like at most you can add 11 million to the number of iPhones that were sold.
Yeah, but it's nowhere near going to be that,
like,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Like at best, but like really, maybe it's like 5 million or so.
Probably even less, because if you take the 1 to 2 million normal number, right? So that's like the base rate. So if you do 11 minus 2, then you're at 8. And then let's say out of all the 8 million people, 75% of them just did it because they heard it on the news. Like, if you got overboard,
yeah,
you're only going to be at like 2 million maximum, I think, like, of people that weren't going to buy a battery replacement and then not upgrade their phone because of it. Like, there are plenty of people in that 10 million group who weren't going to upgrade their phone this year anyway. Mm-hmm. And this is why it was like the number three on the other factors on the letter. It's because it probably accounted for maybe a million new iPhone upgrades. But a million new iPhone upgrades is still an important number to note for the investors when the shortfall was probably around 7.5 million.
Sure. Like they were like percentage of it, right?
Yeah, they were like 8 billion down in revenue on their estimate, and if you do like a normal average selling price, that's like 7.5 million iPhones. So 1 million out of 7.5 is not inconsequential. And then maybe if you put like 5 million less in China than they expected, and then that last 1.5 million was from the weaker demand in some developed markets, right? Like, that's kind of how I've been puzzling this around in my head. They're not saying that they would have sold 11 million more phones if the $29 program was not in place.
What do you think that number is safe to include in the meeting and then, you know, make its way out, but did not include in any of the, you know, in the letter to investors or in the CNBC interview with Cramer? Like, you know, is something about that number that Apple wouldn't want to share and then, you know, did, or because it was presented in the context of like Gruber correcting some pretty bad analysis that only like really lowballed the guesses of how many batteries per store and didn't even like factor in mail-in replacements. And it was just like, it was presented as like a way to like correct some pretty bad analysis. But like, why not include it in the letter, you know, say?
Well, there's lots of stats they could have included in the letter, but didn't.
Sure. Yeah.
So, and I think like Apple isn't stupid. They know that if they have an all-hands meeting with everyone that all the employees can watch online and all be in person,
yeah,
like, details of those meetings are going to leak out. Like, it's just going to happen. We saw it happen last year with all the iOS 12 performance stuff. They know it. There's so much laser focus. They know this stuff is going to come out. So if there was, like, sensitive numbers that they didn't want to be in the public domain, they wouldn't be showing up the all-hands meeting either. They'd have private meetings with the marketing group or whatever and discuss it there, like, when you can actually have accountability of the people in the room, not every Apple employee in the world can just log onto this website and watch what's happening. So I think they weren't probably too concerned about the publicity of the numbers. Obviously, I think what it comes down to is that it was the third, you know, the third or fourth factor on the list, and they didn't want, the letter was already really, really long, and they don't want to just stuff it with loads of random numbers endlessly. Okay. And maybe in the earnings call at the end of the month, they might bring up some more, they might go into more detail about that stuff.
Oh, that's a good thing to watch for, sure.
Yeah, or if they were questioned about it by an investor, like, what do you think the impact of the battery program was? Then they'd reel off some stats, because they always have stats that they don't share. It's like when they do normal earnings reports, they do their earnings and they highlight some figures, and then they have other statistics that they sometimes bring up on the call. Even like dumb stuff like Apple TV sales, they don't report them, but that doesn't mean they don't say them if, you know, it becomes relevant. So I think that's probably it, because it's just a useful little tidbit. Like, they spent the vast majority of that letter focusing on China. They gave a lot of numbers on the China shortfall and the difference in the percentages, and then they gave some examples of revenue of markets which gave excessively over, you know, beat revenue records, and then they listed some other factors. But I don't. They're not gonna, like, they have stats for so much stuff that you have to pick and choose, right?
Yeah. At the end of the day. It would be useful to know, for the sake of projection, how many of the 11 million, aside from, like, you know, the factor of like how many you could, I think at the beginning of the year they were replacing as many batteries as they could. There was a big backlog, but once inventory was kind of normal, how many was the first half of the year versus the second half? Because then you could look at the data of like how many they've replaced in like the last, you know, 3 months of the year as like what they're going to do going forward now that it's not in the news every day. But how, you know, how many of the 11 million was like the first 3 months, the first 6 months, the first 9 months? And I'm, you know, I don't think they'll be that detailed, but like, I could see them saying like, you know, the bulk of this was the first half of the year and we saw it level off at the end of the year. And, you know, now it's kind of flat of like how many people are replacing batteries. Just to say, whether they think it will be an ongoing, you know, factor or not.
Yeah, and Apple can drill down even further internally, I have no doubt. Like, they can know if people that bought the battery replacement this year, did they buy a new iPhone and assign it to their own Apple ID this year? Like, all of those stats is stuff that Apple could find out and know, and they probably do track internally. But there's loads of stuff that Apple doesn't share with the public. Like, yeah. I think you mentioned last week of that source of the 2% more people get through the day on iOS 12. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a positive stat, right? Like, that's better than zero. It's not going down. But they just don't share a lot of stuff because, A, it'd be tedious, and B, there's stuff that they want to hold to their chest for other reasons. But, sure. Like, yeah. You know, people don't understand, like, big companies have even Apple that collects very little data, they still have so much data on your behavior habits. And you know, they're sending out emails at the moment to people that are still using iPhone 6s. Like, here are three stats personalized compared to the iPhone XR. Like, your phone is three times slower than the brand new iPhone XR. Buy it now. Like, they have so much information that they can draw on if they really have to. And that's how they end up making models. And that's how it becomes to a point where on the larger scale, this is the first time they've missed their guidance in, you know, 14 years or 18 years. So, like, they don't do that by accident. They're not just making up numbers. They have so much data that crunches these estimates. Like, you just don't think about it because, you know, in the scheme of things, it doesn't really matter unless you're in the, you know, you're in the divisions doing the analysis. Like, as an outsider, it probably doesn't matter. But they have so many stats on everything. They just that's just what companies do. That's what they have to do.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by SetApp, the first subscription service for Mac apps. And together, we're giving Happy Hour listeners the chance to win Apple's brand new MacBook Air. And listen close, as this will be the last chance to enter our giveaway. SetApp is the first subscription service for Mac, offering users access to a suite of over 130 plus apps for just $9.99 a month. A few of the notable apps include Clean My Mac X, the Flume Instagram for Mac app, Archiver, Chatmate for WhatsApp, and the Capto screen recording app, among over 100 other Mac apps. Since launching almost 2 years ago, SetApp has consistently added great apps along with new subscribers to make the platform a success for both its users and developers. Sign up for a free trial of SetApp's collection of over 130 Mac apps using our link in the show notes. And look for the giveaway entry form to sign up for your chance to win a brand new space gray MacBook Air with Touch ID. Again, this is the last week to enter the giveaway, so don't forget to sign up. Our thanks to SetApp for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mia, one of my New Year's resolutions was to just let AirPower go. And, you know, like we said at the beginning of the year, like, you know, they missed the 2018 window, but then, and left there's anything more to discuss, like, then what's the point? And so I've really just been like, you know, AirPower jokes aren't funny anymore. And if it's, you know, just, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But the AirPower, just like AirPower won't show up, the AirPower rumors won't go away. And on Saturday, there was a story that gets our hopes up that AirPower production either has started or is starting soon. So tell me about that.
Yeah, even for me, and I'm invested in this stuff, as everybody knows, but even I've given up on AirPower jokes. Like, I really want the product to exist, but I've exhausted everything to say about it unless, you know, this random stuff happens. And even this report, I'm scared. I think a lot of people jump on it because it's like salivating for any shred of anything. I'll say it and then we can get into it. But I'm skeptical of what this says because this is from Charger Lab, who previously had renders of the 18 watt USB-C charger that came out last year. But they said it was for the, and the renders were accurate, but they wrote up that was the iPhone charger, and obviously that didn't happen. It's right. Sold separately and it's bundled with the iPads. So they have track record, not perfect. But, you know, Quo and loads of other sources aren't perfect either, so there's no point discounting it entirely.
Sure.
But what they showed is a couple of tweets, not blog posts, because for the charger thing, they made a blog post with big images.
Yeah, yeah.
For the AirPower situation, they did two tweets saying that they have been told that someone told them that AirPower is now entering mass production. And they first said that they'd got information through the supply chain of Luxshare Precision, which Apple uses as like a components for like cameras and sensors and stuff.
Hmm.
And that they had started production of AirPower. But Luxshare doesn't necessarily make full complete products. So they're not really going to pump out finished items. They're more like component supplier.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of weird. But then they followed up with a second tweet that said that Pegatron is starting max production from January 21st, which is like next week.
Yeah. And there were several hours in between tweet one and tweet two. Like,
yeah. And they didn't even say that tweet one was wrong. They just kind of... Also, Pegatron is starting mass production on the 21st. So maybe, I think what they're getting at is that Luxshare is making components for AirPower, and then Pegatron is doing final assembly. And Pegatron involvement was first reported back in June. Mark Gurman at Bloomberg said that Apple was working with Pegatron to actually make the AirPower mat in the first place. So that does Pegatron, at least line up with
Pegatron
other sources.
Pegatron makes the AirPods, right?
No, Inventec makes AirPods.
Oh, Inventec. Okay, okay.
Yeah, Pegatron makes iPhones.
Okay, okay.
They like split with Foxconn and stuff.
Right.
And Pegatron tends. I think this year Pegatron mainly makes the iPhone XR, and then Foxconn mainly makes iPhone XS, basically.
So Pegatron has a lot of free time on their hands.
their factories need stuff to do. They call it a credible source in the supply chain, but then the tweets. Pictures of the marketing images of the AirPower mat that we've seen before, and then screenshots of conversations from like WeChat in Chinese. I'll go out on a limb. If I have credible sources, they are so private that they don't get screenshot and posted on Twitter. So that was where I was starting to get a bit, don't know. Like if you actually have a really credible source, you don't reveal their message by posting it on Twitter.
Sure. Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. So I think that they were screenshotting someone that someone else had told them from a credible source. So it feels like a bit like third hand. And I want to believe, but at the same time, I kind of can't like rally the troops behind this really. Because if you look back at 2018, we had stories through the first 6 months of 2018 as well. Loads of random websites reporting that they were hearing AirPower's entering production.
I mean, there were even credible reports from like Bloomberg that Apple was targeting September, and then, you know, it didn't happen. And then Kuo said, you know, the end of 2018 or the beginning of 2019, and clearly the end of 2018 did not happen either. So it's like all along the way, Apple hasn't known, so no one else could know. And maybe here we are, like it's time. But like with you, this isn't quite the kind of a story that we'd hold up as like, you know, we believe it. So
someone's saying it, but it's
it's bigger. It's too big to ignore.
Yeah,
but it's not one. It's like you'd put a rumor label on it, not like a report label on it.
Yeah, and if the AirPower Mac is entering mass production, we should be seeing other leaks that go along with this, like stuff being trademarked, like a picture of AirPower schematics leaking out to the press, for instance, or the AirPods charging case having a big bucket of a million of those being made. Like, there are other trails that happen if something is entering mass production. And unlike smaller products like the iPad, like even the iPad we saw full schematics for, like, to me, it feels like there would be corresponding stuff to back this up. And at the moment, there doesn't really seem to be. Not to say it's necessarily wrong, because I can't say, you can't point to anything and say like they're just making it up, because there's no like concrete thing to go against it. But I'm not expecting it to be correct, if that makes sense. Like I'm not going into this week now going, yes, AirPower is coming out next week. Because if it really is getting mass produced on the 21st, the product will be out within a month, because Apple doesn't like to hold stock for too long. They don't want to hold inventory for like, their normal inventory period is 4 to 6 weeks. So if it's going to mass production on the 21st, it would be out, you know, before the end of February, unless something crazy is going on. Like that, there just has to be other indicators to follow along. And so far, we haven't seen those. The best thing we've got is that Kuo said that AirPower is coming out in late 2018 or early 2019. And it is early 2019. So
yeah, for the next few couple months.
There you go.
Yeah, I think we're moving into a healthy area with this development, though, which is we used to, you know, be on the edge of our seats and hopeful with everything that we saw. And Now, we haven't let go of all hope, but what we're actively discounting, or at least, you know, preparing ourselves for stories that say, here it's coming. And I was like, well, we'll see. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't think it's been cancelled, but I just think it'll be out when it's done. And they don't want to announce anything in between because they're already embarrassed by having to delay it before. So it's like,
okay, I'm get behind that.
When it's ready to go out the door, it's ready to go out the door. And it's not related to any other announcement. People keep coming up with these ideas like, ooh, what if Apple has a March event? That's where the AirPower Mat's coming out. What if Apple has a new wireless charger, you know, or battery cases or anything else? Like, people love to make patterns when there aren't things. Like this product was clearly scheduled to come out in like the first half of last year. It missed that window. Then it was probably meant to come out in the second half of that year with the new phones, and it's missed that window too. Like, at this point, there's no strategy. It's just going to come out when it's ready to come out, and that'll be it.
Yeah. Okay. Next thing is there was a report from Matt Odakara that really like spiked my interest. They say that, and it's so crazy for this to be exciting, but it's just because it's like Mac Mini status. Mac Mini was really old. They made a new one. It's exciting. Matt Odakara says Apple is developing a new iPod Touch, and the reason that is exciting is because Apple hasn't released a new one since 2015, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they still sell it, you know, for the same price.
And if you go on the refurbished store, they still sell the fifth generation iPod Touch, which can't run iOS 10.
It runs
not iOS 11. It can't run iOS 10.
Yeah, it runs iOS 9, which can't be safe, and really it doesn't fit like Apple's, you know, vision for their platforms. This is interesting. It's like, I don't think there's really a I don't think they have to this year. Like, I think the last time they had a new iPod Touch in 2015, it was like that chip was about to be, you know, dead in terms of like iOS. You know, they'll sell refurbished iPod Touch with old software, but they won't sell a new one. They'd probably want to discontinue it, you know, move it all to refurbished, or, you know, just stop selling iPod Touches. But I think in 2015, when they needed to update it if they wanted to support like that fall's version of iOS or maybe the next year. And I think with the current iPod Touch, it runs the same chip as the iPad Mini 4 and the iPhone 6, and then for that matter, the Apple TV 4th generation and the HomePod.
Yeah,
and I don't feel like that's going to be, because iOS 12 works with iPhone 5S and iPhone 6, I don't feel like iOS 13 would kill the 5S. And the 6, like, it's, I think both probably supported just because they want to maintain like the good, they got from iOS 12, and then like iOS 14 can start killing off devices. But I don't feel like it's for that reason. But for whatever the reason is, I'm optimistic that this happens and feel positive about it, because as I mentioned on the show, my daughter had an iPod Touch and the battery just wore out on it. And the cost of replacing the battery, I don't know the price off the top of my head, but I think it was like around 60 or 70 bucks. And it was just like, versus a new one, it didn't make any sense for me. And then buying a new one of the same thing from 4 years ago really bothers me. And so we just had the conversation of, they don't make a new version of this yet. And so we're not going to replace it yet. And you know, she understood for what it's, you know, all she could. With this story, I just thought it'd be fun to tell her, hey, there's a rumor that Apple's going to make a new iPod Touch. And she's like, oh, can we get it when it comes out? And I was like, yeah, we will. If they make it, we don't know for sure yet, but if they make it, we'll buy it. And she's excited. She said, that's going to be like my phone. And I said, exactly. Aww. It can be like your phone. If they make it, we'll see. You know, because she's too young.
My sister uses an iPod Touch, and she has the latest generation model. But for Christmas, my mom asked me, like, why don't we get the new iPod Touch as like a Christmas present?
Yeah.
And I was like, Mom, that is the new iPod Touch. She's just had it for like 3 years at this point. And there is, it's just like, Mom's like, it's like alien to her that Apple keeps products around for this long. Because, you know, she's just used to iPads and iPhones.
For the longest time, like, there was an iPhone, there was an iPod Touch. And it was just like, the iPod Touch was always like where you kind of wanted the iPhone to go in terms of like how thin it is and like portable. But then they started making, you know, the bigger iPhones. And the iPod Touch went from 3.5 inches to 4 inches, but never went to 4.7 and all the bigger screens.
I mean, the iPod Touch has still not yet got Touch ID.
Yeah, no Touch ID, no Face ID, single, you know, camera in the back. Like, and you, like, I don't know if they would do all that on a new version. Like, maybe they would, I would guess, like, Touch ID and not Face ID, and, like, the same case size and all that, just like faster and like a better camera maybe. But like even from the fifth generation to the sixth generation, it wasn't a big change. Like they got rid of the little camera loop on the back. There was that one weird version where it had no camera to like hit a price point, and you know, they got rid of that one. I think it was only available in like gray and
8 gigabytes only.
Yeah. That's, it's weird, but I hope this is true because I will be, as a parent, in the market for this. Like, we have the 9.7-inch iPad for my daughter as well. Like, that's like her kind of computer. And it goes a lot of places with us, and she gets great use out of it. But the division when she had the working iPod Touch was that the iPad was for educational purposes, and the iPod Touch was kind of the gaming thing. And that was
it's the funnest iPod ever.
Yeah, it still is. And there was a division of like hardware, like one's for fun, one's for, you know, learning things. And that worked for a while until the battery died. And then I had to kind of loosen up that division. So I would love for there to be a new iPod Touch. I think the colors are way better than the 5C because that was plastic. The iPod Touches are aluminum. But also the 10R, like the blue iPod Touch is what I would want out of a blue iPhone.
Yeah, it's much like more saturated and like pops more.
Yeah, I think the red's the same, but the blue is I like it better.
Yeah, because the Touch is $199 to start. You can even get more expensive models when you put the storage up. Mm-hmm. But for $199, you can buy an iPhone SE. Like, Apple doesn't sell it anymore, but third-party retailers still sell the SE. And that's the newer chip. It has Touch ID and has a better camera. It's like... Yep.
It's the equivalent of an iPhone 6S in terms of the chip. So you get live photos. You can do – the iPod Touch cannot do group FaceTime with video. It can only do group FaceTime with audio. But that – and that's the case with iPhone 6 as well. But it's not the case with the 6S. So if you got an SE, you could do group video calling as well, I believe.
Yeah, so the SE is like – you can buy it new for the same price as the iPod Touch and you're getting more features across the board.
Yeah.
And you're having a phone inside as well. The fifth generation Touch came, the sixth generation Touch, sorry, came out in 2015 in July. And so it used the A8 chip, and the iPhone 6 came out in the September before. So the 6S hadn't been released yet. So it was still it was the newest chip that Apple made at the time.
Yeah.
And that tends to be their strategy with the Touches. It's like when they come out, they're pretty well spec'd, but then they just leave them to languish around.
When the SE came out, it had the same chip as the 6S, you know, six months later. So it was like, at the time, it was like, wow, they're really being aggressive with that SE, you know, in terms of the hardware. And then by not updating it, it made more sense. So then we get to what will be in a theoretical iPod Touch 7.
Yeah, I think they'd give it an A10 probably.
Like, it wouldn't be A12 Bionic. There's a lot of room between what's in it right now and what could be in it, even if they didn't update it for another 4 years.
Yeah, the 329 iPad has an A10, right? So I'd probably say A10 or A11. Like, I think that's fine. Here's what I hope will happen. I think the 5S is not getting iOS 13.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I think the 6 will, the 6 line will, but they'll cut off the 5S because already there's, you know, we're seeing limitations of group FaceTime. And hopefully with this UI revamp of some description, I want them to take this opportunity that it's finally time to cut off the 4-inch phones.
Ah, and that's
right?
An iPod as well.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So if they did iOS 13 on the 6 screen and up, so it's 4.7
the chip,
inches
it's the
minimum.
Size.
Yeah, so if they did 4.7 inches the minimum, you don't have to worry about supporting the SE anymore. You put the new iPod Touch out with a 4.7-inch screen or a 5-inch screen, about around there. And then you have a minimum display spec, which allows you to be more creative in how you actually use that screen with the new Springboard or whatever else they're going to do. So that's where I'm like hoping it will go. I'm not convinced they're going to do that because... I don't know, but I think the 5S is going to get the chopping block, because we've already seen them start to limit features like group FaceTime now, so I think it'd be weird if it carried on staying. And they've given it so much support, like it's lasted forever, and 12 really, really helps its performance, but it does feel like it's kind of at the end of its road.
It could be that 12 fixes it, and let's not break it with 13.
yeah, like, it's in a good spot. And I really don't think anyone would be mad if the 5S drops support. It's like 6 years of support at that point. Like, that is perfectly fine, in my opinion.
Because the SE is, like, 2 years newer than the 5S in terms of the chip generation. So, yep. You know, there's probably
Yeah, but the SE is already not sold, so they've sorted out that problem.
Right, yeah.
So it's like, we don't have to worry about that one. So they could cut off 4-inch phones, I'd say. And I think people generally be happy with that. Like, I know everyone's like, oh, I love the SE. I love the SE. Like, do a 4.7. If they want to address that market, do a 4.7-inch SE and be done with it. Like, you can make it small. Fine. For the touch, give it a 4.7-inch screen. And yeah, it'll probably keep Touch ID. And it'll get the newer gold colors. And it'll get the newer chip. And that'll be about it.
Drop the headphone jack, add USB lightning.
Yeah, the headphone jack is probably the funny because it's the most music product, right?
Yeah, but as long as you put the headphones in the box for lightning, I think that's fine.
Yeah, I think people get on with it.
Yeah.
The reality is the iPod Touch is for kids, right? Like, it's not for adults who have weird headphones. And stuff.
I think there are some uses for like deployment. Where an iPad, even for the same price, wouldn't be right. But it's just like, it's easier to manage the iPod Touch for different reasons.
Yeah, I go to a few restaurants and stuff sometimes, and they use iPod Touches as like the menu when you with that the server uses. So you say what you want, and then they just tap it on the iPod Touch. Yeah. When a bigger iPad would probably be too much. Essentially,
I've been in an AT&T store where they have like wearable holsters for the iPads that they use, whereas like an iPhone or an iPod Touch would go in your pocket. And I remember when I worked at the Apple store, it was always, I think the whole time I worked there, it was iPod Touch based, but eventually they switched to iPhone like after I was no longer there. But there was also some roles where you'd carry around an iPad, and it was like, you know, you weren't doing much with your hands at that point. Like, your job was to manage that iPad for different ways. So yeah, I still think there's a big form, like the one possibility before this rumor was like the iPad mini update somehow, you know, addresses like the iPod Touch market, and the iPod Touch can go away and the iPod is like officially dead. But I think there's a big difference in the iPod Touch size and the iPad size, just like there is for the phones. So even the mini. So I'm fingers crossed that this one pans out. It's the first and only mention of it. But Matt Odakara is not a terrible source for this kind of thing. So,
One thing I will mention actually is for about the last 6 months, if you register a new sixth generation iPod Touch and then look at the Find My iPhone emails that you get, you know, you've registered a new iOS device.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, it bugs out and reports it as a seventh generation iPod Touch. So you buy a sixth generation iPod Touch. You set it up, you activate it, and then Apple sends you an email telling you, congratulations on setting up your new 7th generation iPod Touch.
So it'll have whatever chip we had 6 months ago. we've solved it. All right.
It's a funny bug.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Upstart. Applying for a loan is a lot like applying for a job that you don't get to interview for. Instead, loan companies make their decisions based off your credit score and history, without getting to know the whole you. Now, thanks to Upstart.com, it never has to be that way again. Upstart is revolutionizing the way you borrow money by rewarding you for your job experience and education in the form of a smarter interest rate. When you're young and just starting out on your own for the first time, or even if you've just never established a credit history before, it can feel daunting to overcome that. I've been there in college. That's where Upstart can help. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. Unlike traditional credit underwriting, which could be biased against people with a short credit history, Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in less than 2 minutes without affecting your credit score. The best part? Once your loan is approved, the funds will be transferred to you the very next business day. The next day. Over 100,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their wedding, or even just make a large purchase. So don't wait. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. Hurry. to upstart.com/happyhour to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/happyhour. Our thanks to Upstart for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. I mean, the other half of the Mac Odakara story is they don't not say that the iPhone might go to USB-C. It's not a direct report of like iPhone switching to USB-C. I think they kind of say is like people who are at CES were talking about the iPhone maybe going to USB-C. But it's enough to say like that someone thinks the iPhone may go to USB-C, right?
I guess.
Maybe, yeah. They make reference to the iPad Pro in 2018 going from Lightning to USB-C, and so I don't think it's to be confused with like the USB-A side of the Lightning cable changing. I think it's clear like what they're saying is that someone's saying that the iPhone may go to USB-C, and not the cable but the port on the phone. But this is a packed episode of like reports and rumors that are not like, you know, everything's behind it, but they were just putting
this is quite typical for the start of the year.
That's like, true. That's fair.
People like to make stuff up or dress stuff up nicely for, mm-hmm. you know, everyone just likes the hype, right? It's the new season of Apple products. Like, what's going to happen? Like,
well, and the sourcing, I guess, isn't you know, because, well, I guess just that's all it is, that the sourcing isn't really pinned down yet. So you work with what you got.
Yeah, the problem with, like, they mention it's, like, from CES knowledge, right? Like, yeah. A lot of CES booths will just tell you whatever you want. We have USB-C products. Yeah, Apple's changing to USB-C this year. Like, no, we think Lightning's staying around. It's some Lightning phones. Like, we don't... The decision's probably locked down, but it's still early enough that the parts don't really leak through to the supply chain yet. And we haven't seen schematics and stuff that really show what port is it going to be. I'm out of all of the like features that I want from new iPhones, the change from Lightning to USB-C is really like low on my list.
How it affect you?
Yeah, like out of the things that like make me want to upgrade, like the fact it's got a USB-C port and a lot of Lightning port on it makes very little difference to me, really. Like, yeah, I just have, when I charge my phone, I have cables there that I have like two Lightning cables, one in the office and then one in the bedroom, and then I just plug them in, and then it's like, yeah. Or I can use wireless charging if I wanted to do that. Or if Apple finally releases the AirPower mount, I'll charge on that instead. Like, I very rarely plug my phone in. Like, when I'm doing app development, I just have Lightning cables in the office ready to go. If that was USB-C, I'm not really gaining anything. I rarely feel the need to, you know, I don't want to plug my phone into an external display all of a sudden to do something.
Like, it's just not much you can, like, even on the iPad Pro so far, there isn't much that you can do with USB-C that you couldn't do with Lightning plus an adapter, I'd say.
Yeah, at least on the iPad, you can kind of like plug in some of the dong. Like, for instance, on the iPad, you can plug in the SD card reader. You can plug in a camera and plug into an external display because it can split off both.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing like a more professional use case where you're like reviewing photos and importing them at the same time. The phone, you're just never not going to really want to do that. Like, I don't get the urge. I'm not like, please put USB-C.
I will say, like, if I had the choice, you know, Zach, do you want Lightning or USB-C? I would pick USB-C just because sure. It's on the iPad, it's on the Mac, and I would still be faced with like the fact that a lot of accessories like the mouse and keyboard, the Apple TV remote, that those things still use Lightning. But and if this ever happens, like, people still aren't over the 30-pin switch. people remember it being last year.
Painful.
Yeah. I think that would happen again, even if it's better.
Yeah, like, it wasn't really a problem in the iPad Pro because that's a relatively low-volume machine, mm-hmm. and people spending $1,000 plus on that kind of stuff kind of already know what they're going in for. People just upgrading their phone on a two-year cycle. My connectors don't work anymore. What's this? Especially as the USB-C port looks like the Lightning port to a far, you know, if you kind of squint at it, it kind of looks the same. Yeah. Like, it's the same pill shape, essentially. It's confusing.
Yeah.
Like, the thing is, if the next iPhone was USB-C and I bought one, I'd just buy two extra USB-C cables and just replace the Lightning cables there today. I don't think I'd get any other benefits out of it, really. Like, It's a very, very like secondary concern. Like, and then you see the iPhone XR, which has Lightning, and the Lightning port's smaller than USB-C, and yet they're still struggling to like fit it in the bottom of the XR. Like, it has to be offset at a weird angle. It doesn't seem like they're even ready yet to actually do it. Like, the motivation isn't there when they. With the iPad, it's like, you can plug all this stuff in. You can plug in external, you can plug into gigabit Ethernet if you want. You can plug into keyboards. You can plug into external displays. You can plug into cameras. It's like, with the phone, those use cases don't really exist. So you're only really getting the symmetry if you happen to own USB-C products everywhere else. And you still have to remember that we're in the Mac world and have, you know, newer Mac laptops with USB-C ports everywhere. The most people buying iPhones have, at best, like Windows computers or whatever. And the vast majority of people don't plug their iPhone into anything apart from charging it. So, like, those concerns are kind of not. It's just lower priority for me. Like.
Yeah. Well, my contribution here is to say that part of Mac au de carte story was. Just putting it out there that they're hearing it and that it is not, again, it's like a rumor level and not report level. And if I had the choice, I would want USB-C selfishly, because then I'd have the same port on the iPhone, the iPad, and what I use on the Mac. And I think the Android people would love it too, because.
Yeah, I'd pick USB-C if I was getting the option.
Yeah.
It's just, but I'm not like desperate for it.
Yeah. And then the follow up to this is today, OnLeaks, partnered with the website Comparaha to say what he's seeing is no USB-C. So OnLeaks had a render of what might be an iPhone 11 last weekend or so, and this week he's back with a different one, which we'll discuss in a moment. But he also had some specs to share today, which the first thing is. No USB-C, Lightning stays. And then tell me what else is going on here with camera specs and the like.
Yeah, so they obviously did the new rendering, which we'll get to. That's another alternative design for the triple lens thing. Mm-hmm. And then separately, they had some, like, a spec sheet, basically, of things that they believe. And essentially, it's camera upgrades. So the selfie camera at the moment is 7 megapixels, right? Like the current
7 or 8, yeah.
Yeah, and now it's going up to 10, according to this report, and the 12-megapixel sensor would go up to 14. That's so both the dual sensors at least would go up to 14. And then the third camera in that system would remain at 10. Well, actually, 10 is lower than... Because at the moment, both the cameras on the back are 12. So the idea would be upgrading both of them to 14 and then adding another one, which is 10 megapixels.
Yeah, and there could be some benefits to having a lower megapixel camera in the mix, I think. I think for the longest time, like, Apple was staying at 8 and just getting better and better at having an 8-megapixel camera. I think maybe there could be some benefits to having a 10 meg there. Like, it could be optimized for certain situations. But at any rate, 12 to 14 on the dual, a new one that didn't exist before is 10, which is the same as the front camera going from, I think, 8 to 10. So think about it, the front one being 8, I think that's what it is. It's like, for the longest time, we had 8 megapixels on the 4S, you know, and I think 5, and that was like, the 4S is like kind of regarded like one of the first really good iPhone photography, you know, iPhones. And now I've got that like on the front of the camera. We've got a pretty good camera, so. Yeah.
Again, megapixels aren't picture quality.
Right, right.
The jump from 12 to 14 is
its
kind of...
It's size of the image you can capture, right?
And yeah, and so much you can have a 14-megapixel image that is just 14 million pixels of nothing. And yeah. it's a big image, but there's nothing on it. Like, right. There's no detail there.
Yeah.
Or you can have a 10, 8... Like, there are camera... We used to have an old digital camera that was, like, dedicated, and that would take 8-megapixel photos, and most of those photos it took still look better overall than... You know, the modern day iPhone shots, just because it was a massive lens on the back, so yeah. It could take in more light and it had less grain and had less noise. Mm-hmm. And that's really what this comes down to. I think we have been long enough on the same sensor, essentially, like the same sensor housing for the sure. cameras. So if anything, this suggests that they've actually like generationally moved along to better cameras altogether. If it is correct, yeah. But the actual like megapixel numbers are kind of different. Like Apple always loves to tout however many nanometers the pixels are apart, like
yeah.
It's 1.3 microns now. And focus pixels, and they have all the other photon, you know, they love bringing out those like buzzwords. I'm sure they'll do that again. But it, combining triple lens and megapixel upgrades, clearly the camera is going to be a big focus this year.
Mm-hmm. Now, the difference in this in OnLeak's second iPhone 11 render based on what he's received to be prototypes of the new iPhone design, this is visually, this is way different than what we discussed, what, a week ago?
Yeah. The week ago one was the rectangle in the corner with weird placements of the dots of like a triangle shape, and then a flash and the microphone flecked around there, and it was quite big and bulky. It was like the size of like an Apple Watch screen in the corner. This one is like you're going back to the horizontal camera system, dual camera,
like on the and making phones.
From the previous generation, and then making it slightly wider and putting a third camera in between, and then moving that whole module to the center horizontally and shifted downwards the phone vertically a little bit as well. So rather than in the top left corner, it's in like the middle above the Apple logo. And it does look a lot sleeker than the quadrangle renders. But it kind of reminds me of like an Android phone, because a lot of the Android phones put their cameras in the middle rather than in the corner. Not that really matters, but that's just what kind of shot out of me. And the big takeaway I got of this render is that everything is really like densely packed together.
It's like the one we discussed a week ago was so ugly that we don't think anyone would like mock it up for fun. And then this one is like really clever, and it's way better balanced, and like visually it just looks better. But there's a lot about it that's really clever. Like,
And to me, it also feels like one that just like an enthusiast would like mock up and post as like a fun thing. Mm. Not saying that it is, you know, not based on reality necessarily, but it does look at something that's kind of more lean towards, could they even make this? Like, they're barely making the dual camera system bigger, and yet also putting in the camera into it. Like, putting another camera into it. And like the flash isn't a dedicated hole anymore. It's like a ring around the center camera. Mm-hmm. Well, does that make the flash less strong and less intense? Like the actual light gives off because it's smaller surface area, and B, does that not affect like the camera's picture you take? Like if you're taking a picture with the far right camera, will the flash not be at a weird position, or the one in the middle, you not get this weird glow around the pictures? Like the previous ugly design looked to me perfectly buildable and realistic as like to exist.
Yeah,
whereas this one has more questions about, this can be made in Photoshop, but could this be made as an actual product?
Sure, yeah.
And then I agree, it looks prettier.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Is like the one we discussed last week, my feeling on it was that you would upgrade to it because of what it could offer, but not because of how it looked. And this one, like what it can offer may be cool, but it also just kind of looks neat too. Like in terms of like, that's a new designed iPhone, it's different.
They also have renders of the front as well. So
yeah,
you flip
it over.
You see some screen difference as well. So they say the bezels on the left and the right and the top and the bottom are slightly slimmer. So, you know, like the millimeters get even shrinker, get even less. And the notch is smaller because they've moved the earpiece. So it's not in line with the other cameras. It's kind of above them in that same lip. So essentially the notch is less wide because it's not putting the flood illuminator, the IR sensor, the real camera, and the earpiece in a row. It's just putting the lenses in a row and then moving the earpiece upwards.
Yeah.
And I mean, it looks newer. Like,
yeah, you can look at this thing and say, like, that one is much newer than the ones we have now. That's fresh. This is like the super optimistic idea of what an iPhone 11 may look like, or in this case, maybe an iPhone 11 Max, because I think there were some. I think that WSJ had kind of mentioned that maybe the Max gets the three camera system, and the current the non Max version doesn't. It sticks with two. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I kind of just like last week. We don't know what to think of this really. Like, we're not gonna like assume this is what we have until there's some like leaks of the blueprints, you know, kind of thing, schematics.
Yeah, the schematic stuff. Yeah. Because the OnLeaks' premise here is that Apple is floating both of these prototypes at the moment around, but like it's not unusual for Apple to have competing test runs and hardware of the same product. Like for the iPhone 7 generation, they had a 7 Plus that didn't have a dual camera, and then they had one that did. Like, so if something they wanted to ship the dual camera one, but if it couldn't be done at the end, they could cut it off and still be all right. Like, they wouldn't not have a Plus phone anymore. But this is like two drastically different prototypes, like designed from completely different ends of the spectrum. And I'm a bit skeptical that, like, I don't necessarily agree with the narrative that both of these are flying around. Like, for a start, we're in January, so it feels kind of late already. And B, these designs are just so different. Like, they've been, it's like they've been invented by different companies almost. Like,
or like different, it's like you're looking at like iPhone 11 and then iPhone 12, which would come after 11S. Like, if you're imagining how this might,
yeah, be. Like the quadrangle one looked more like an S, you know, like the next round of S revision. And if you look at the history, the 6 lasted 6, 6S, 7, 8 almost. So that was four generations.
Yeah.
Whereas this is more significant change after only one S year, essentially. So I don't know. I'm perfectly fine if this ships, because some people are like, this looks ugly. I was like, I don't know how you can say that.
That one surprised me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so much sleeker, and people are saying, why'd they move the camera bump downwards? Well, I think logically there, it's so that internally to the space, it can avoid the Face ID cameras because they're quite deep. So if you're going to bring it, if you're going to make it bigger, it would hit the notch if it was top left. So if you bring it down, you also have to bring it down enough to not hit the notch in the middle. So it kind of goes below, if you imagine the internal layout.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, it looks way prettier than the quadrangle thing.
Yeah, I think it looks cool. I would love it if this was a design. I just feel like the last one that we saw was more realistic just because of, you know, physically, what like you said, what they can build. But I guess we'll see.
And also, the last one would fit better with a family. Like, what are they going to do with the 10R and not Max 10S, 2, you know, the next gen, the 11s that aren't triple camera? Are they just going to look the same as the current generation with the lenses in the corners still? Like, I don't know, it'd be a bit weird if it was like that. Or would they like put them all in this design, but only the bigger one has the extra lens on the back? I don't know. Like, it's a weird question. I don't think, some people are like, maybe the 10S Max gets this cool design and the 10S only gets the quadrangle look, but that doesn't line up with the Wall Street Journal rumor that only the biggest high-end one gets the triple camera. So I couldn't, you know, reconcile it that way.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Captera. So here's the thing. It's 2019, but you're probably still doing things the old way at work, right? New year, new you. So start the year off right by replacing that clunky old software that you know causes you angst and agony. Instead, you can find software you love that fits your business's need using Captera.com. Captera is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solutions for your business. Again, totally free. And with over 700,000 reviews of products from real software users, you can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Simply search more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Captera makes it easy to discover the right solution and fast. And since Captera is totally free to browse, you can be empowered to make the best decision for your business without needing to ask your boss for a penny. No need to feel like you don't know where to start. Instead, you can be the expert on what software is best. Join the millions of people who use Captera each month to find the best and right tools for your business. Visit Captera.com/happyhour for free today to find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Captera.com/happyhour. Captera. That's CAPTERRA.com/happyhour. Our thanks to Captera for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mayo, the big story of the week is the smart battery case for the iPhone XS, XR, and iPhone XS Max. This is the same design that 9to5 Mac Ski Rambo first discovered in a glyph in iOS code and then later found an image of how the back of it would look. And no surprises here in terms of like how it looks. I think kind of the surprises are, well, he found references to three different models, which suggested one for each phone this year, which was new. Turned out to be correct. The big surprise is wireless charging support, which we talked about on the show, is like kind of a stretch. If they're going to do this, like, that'd be kind of, you know, kind of neat, but don't expect it. and then the price. So what do we have here?
They're all $129.
Which I recall in the show going way higher. I haven't referenced it, but I just remember.
I believe you said that the max one would be $199.
Yeah, based on the.
And I don't want to brag, but I did say you were insane at that point.
Oh, okay. Well, based on the iPhone XS Max Folio case being priced at $129, it was like, that's pretty expensive. It's a leather wallet, but like, you know, when you put a battery in it, then it's going to, and some intelligence, like some kind of chip to drive it all, I guess, then it costs way more. But it seems to me that they took, I mean, they don't do this on any other phones. They do like a $5 or $10 difference in the case sizes, but they don't do the same case size on like anything across the board. Like even the iPad accessories are different across the board. The MacBook cases are different across the board. I think it's the only thing where there's one price for all three sizes. So it's new in that regard to me.
But it is $30 more than the old iPhone 7 smart battery case, which was $99.
Yeah, but you get wireless too. So that's
you get wireless for it. And the battery is actually bigger. So you get some, like they're not just putting the price up for no reason. Plus, yeah, there's technically more fabric or more material because yeah, the phones are bigger, really. Yeah. Like, yeah. I think it works out.
You've got the same launch colors as you did with the original smart battery case, black or white. Was it black before or was it gray? I think it's charcoal gray. Yeah, pretty sure. It was white and charcoal gray. It wasn't black.
Yeah, whereas these ones are just called white and black.
Yeah, white and black. Yeah. They later added like a red and maybe more colors, but at least red for like a product red. Here, we've got white, we've got black. Again, black and white for all three iPhone sizes. This is only the second Apple case for the iPhone XR, the first being the clear case.
And I have to say that comparing this to the Folio, this one looks a much better value for money than the Folio case.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's different needs, but it's I agree with that. It's like they took the lowest price, you know, say for the iPhone XS, that size. And they could have gone like $129, $139, $149, you know, even, and they didn't. They just said $129 across the board, which I think is fair for, you know, what compared to what you had before, what you get this time, it's pretty good.
It was better than I expect. I was kind of expecting like $150 or something.
Yeah, and the way it came out was it just shows up on Apple.com. It's like a thing, like all of them. There's no press release. There's no like, you know, formal reviews that are like saved. Just like it's online now. You can buy it. You can order it. It'll arrive tomorrow at the soonest. It'll be in Apple stores later this week. That's it.
And unlike every other Apple case, it has the bottom lip for the iPhone X series, right?
Sure.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
So the gestures are going to be slightly more awkward than like the silicone and leather cases, which leave the bottom open, which I really like. Mm-hmm. This closes it up, but interestingly, this does not have the big chin of the old battery cases, because the old battery cases would have obviously the chin of the phone, including like the home button section, and then there'd be a decent inset of just space before you got to the actual bottom of the thing. This one has a very slim lip that goes around the corners. Like, it from the front, it just looks like a silicone case.
Yeah, even when they removed the headphone jack from the 7, the smart battery case was pretty, it had the same dimensions, right? And then here you see that it's like, I mean, it's like the case for the most part. Like, there's some I guess the lightning port kind of behind it, like going up into the battery.
They've kind of, before the battery, the lightning port would be like in line with the lightning port of the actual iPhone, right? Like on the same plane. Whereas now the lightning port's in the raised bit of the hump of the back.
It's like back in the XR area almost.
Yeah, or a bit further down even. Like, because obviously the old cases had the hump in the middle and then it'd be flush at the bottom, right? Like, they wouldn't have that. Whereas now they bring the hump further down, they can bring the lightning port above it, essentially, which has allowed them to remove that gap. And I saw a few people who were like, oh, it's got wireless charging. It doesn't have the lightning port inside anymore. Like, it just charges the phone using Qi. Like, no. It still has, you still have to plug the phone into the internal lightning port as well, but you can charge the case and the phone with Qi if you want to, or you can plug in with the wire. Like, it doesn't charge the phone using Qi through the back of the phone glass. Like, that would just be so inefficient. You just waste
because
power.
It is slower than that. Yeah, I think overall this is pretty compelling. Like, the fact that it exists is neat, and then the fact that they have wireless charging. Like, I don't know that there are other cases with wireless charging. I think like some smaller companies make some, but nothing like mass market. And
Yeah, and if you look at the pricing, it's not too far away, really, from what Apple offers. Like, I don't think Apple's overcharging by a mile here, by any means.
And you'll get the same benefits as the old one, which is, it's, you know, it's got a little bit different design. We mentioned when it was a rumor, you know, a leak, really, of how the battery is kind of full width in the back, but then doesn't go all the way to the top, but doesn't go all the way to the bottom for the most part. It's, like, a little bit different there, which I think is visually, like, more balanced than the old one was. It's like not like a humpback. It's just like, you know, a bulge in the, you know, bottom two thirds of it or so. I think it's better balanced that way. But you just look at the benefit of like the top of it kind of stretching so that you can take it off easily without it being like a pull apart, you know, two part thing. And just the fact that it's got wireless charging, it's like you don't have to choose. I thought it would be fair to, you can have wireless charging or you can have a battery case, you know, pick one. But in this case, you don't lose out on that. It's pretty neat tech-wise.
In terms of capacity, it is a 10.1 watt hour battery, which is up from 8.96 of the iPhone 7 case. So it's bigger capacity in stats and in terms of real world. Apple says that you're getting between like 47 and 75% improvement over what you would get with no case. So like the 10S goes from 12 hours to 21 hours of internet browsing.
So you don't double, but you get like more than
75%.
Than
so yeah, like, yeah. What you have to imagine is if you imagine waking up with your iPhone XS today and it says 100% on the battery indicator, and then tomorrow you wake up and it says 175. Like, that's essentially what's happening.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And then the XS Max is smaller because it's 13-20 and the 10R is 15-22. But even the people, when I tweeted like a little table showing the differences, and people complain like the 10R improvement isn't that much. But I think a good contrast here is like people say the 10S, the normal 10S battery is kind of meh, like average.
Right.
But then the 10R has amazing battery life, right? But that's only a 25% difference because you're going from 12 to 15. And so you're taking that 15-hour, which everyone calls quote-unquote amazing, like all the tech journalists at the moment, it's the new trend, I'm buying a 10R just because the battery life's great. Like, everyone keeps tweeting that across the board.
Yeah.
And so if you get the battery case on that one, you're going from 15 to 22, so you're adding on, like, two more times the difference between the 10S and the 10R, basically, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, I think it'll be noticeable whichever one you get. Obviously, the biggest benefit is if you have the 10S. But even on the 10R, if for some reason the battery life isn't good enough for you, then you can have even more, and you will notice it.
Yeah. This is anything. I mean, like we talked about before that people still use the iPhone 6S and 7 versions of these cases with the older iPhones, and they've just they never made one for the 8 or the 10. And I guess the 8 is kind of what gets left out here, because it turns out there's a lot of confusion with this, but it turns out Apple says they break out in a support document that you can't use the 10S case for the 10. And the only like dimension changes there is that the 10S camera is a little bit bigger, so that a 10 case would be tight on a 10S phone. But this is the other direction, so we thought, well, it'd work, it'd just be a little bit loose around the camera. And it turns out it does work. You just need to have the software be updated for it to recognize it, probably on any of the iPhones that work with it. And then for the 8, there's just no solution there, I guess. Because the camera was like totally different dimensions and everything, so. But so you've got an iPhone 10, huh?
Correct.
Okay. And have you bought one of these?
I have ordered one. Kind of for the journalist aspect more than anything, because I've said before, right, I work from home, so most of the time it's, you know, charge from bedroom or charge from office if I need to. So I'm not like desperately looking for battery life, and the 10 battery life is all right. There are some times when when I'm out for the day, or I'm, you know, driving around, going across the country, visiting family and stuff, where the extra battery would be nice. But I am kind of buying this to just kind of like mess around with. It's my first battery case I've ever owned as well. So it's kind of like new experience. And because it supports Qi, I'm also thinking longer term, like the whole air power thing and how it's going to work on the air power mat and stuff. So I kind of bought it on a whim more than a solid use case myself. And
we had some time to think about it. We knew the leak, so you could consider it then.
Yeah, I'd thought about it, and if it didn't have Qi, I wasn't going to bother, because I know I will be using the air power mat when it comes, so if it doesn't work with that, I'm not going to take it on and off. If it has Qi, I'll pick one up. And because the price wasn't ridiculous as well, I was like, that's a, you know, it's a decent price. I'll come on board, right?
Weird to think it's so hard.
And when I bought it, it wasn't 100% certain if the iPhone X would work with it or not.
That's true.
So I was kind of taking a leap of faith. I was like, if it, you know, if it's a bit of a hassle, but if it really doesn't work, I'll just return it or sell it on non-eBay or something. Like, it's not a big deal, right? So I'm on board. I wasn't one of the people who was like clamoring for more battery life.
Yeah.
But I want to play around with it and have, you know, see what it's like. Especially because the design's changed. Like, it is more humpy and it kind of wedges down. So I thought it'd be a cool thing to like have and play around with. So I'm getting one tomorrow to mess about with a bit, and I'll probably end up just keeping it around. Then when the AirPower Max ships, hopefully soon, I'll try it on that, and then maybe I'll decide if I actually want to keep it long term or I'll sell it on or something. Like,
okay, that's
fine. I don't see it as something I've been like waiting 2 years for.
It's not that you've got the iPhone 10 and that you, I mean, I don't know, it depends on what the new iPhone is in the fall, but like that you plan on keeping the iPhone 10 for as long as you can.
Yeah, I'd probably upgrade this year on the 10. If it's got, like, if the camera upgrades are significant, then I'll be upgrading, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I ordered the iPhone XS Max smart battery case, like, the moment that we saw, you know, the links go up on Apple.com. Because I've not owned one either. Like, I never had one for the 7 or so. But looking back, the idea is pretty appealing of having something, you know, that has the, like, I like the how the lock screen shows like the two batteries, you know, independent, kind of neat. So it's been the widget. Like, it's just something I've not experienced before. It's kind of neat. And then, yeah, the wireless charging support really got me because I didn't expect that. It didn't leak because, you know, it wasn't in the code. And, but sure enough, it works. And I'm impressed by that. The only thing is I know I'm not going to keep the iPhone XS Max when new iPhones come about.
Yeah.
Like I will. I don't love the Max size. You know, after several months of usage, it's just like, it doesn't, I've mentioned this time and again, like it doesn't do enough for me that the smaller phones don't do. Even with the screen difference, like it doesn't take advantage of the space in a way. Maybe iOS 13 will change that. But for now, the bigger size doesn't quite outweigh the fact that it's a bigger phone too. And whenever I hold, like, even a 10R, the size feels nice. And then a 10 or a 10S, like, the size and materials feel nice. Like, it's almost like, how'd you shrink it down to this size? It's really neat. So I am pretty positive that, like, whatever the new iPhones are, I'll want to go down to the, like, if it's the same options as now, just newer. I do like OLED. Like, I looked at the 10R for a little while, like, and it's just, I like the OLED screen a lot. Having it on the watch, you know, seeing it on the phone, like, it appeals to me. I wish it was on the Mac and the iPad. Like, I have an OLED TV, like, being in a dark room and, like, the black being actually black, like, I really like that. So I think my next iPhone would be the 5.8 inch version of, you know, the iPhones they are.
Even if it only has a dual camera.
That's tricky. It's just like the, I mean, it depends on what they do with the third camera, you know.
We don't know yet.
If it's like goofy AR stuff, I don't care.
Yeah, like, that's my problem as well. Like, I, with the XS cycle, if I was interested in the Max, I would have upgraded last year as well. But I don't want to get, like, I don't want those bigger phones. Like, the 5.8-inch phone is really nice. Even the XR size is fine. But the Max size is like so big.
Yeah,
but
the 5.8 is like the closest to like what an iPhone 7 or 8 was, because you know, it's a little taller in terms of like where you've got to reach on the screen, but it's a pretty good size. So I ordered one of these, but it hasn't even arrived yet, and I'm kind of like getting my fix from like seeing like the hands-on reviews go out early. It's like I will receive it. I've already started the return process, like where you print out the return label. You even have to print out like a hazmat label because it's a battery. But I was thinking, like, there's no way I'm going to keep this iPhone, you know, after the new ones come out. I want to trade it in so bad and get the smaller phone. And that'll be the reason to upgrade no matter like what other changes there are. And, you know, you can trade in the phone, but you can't trade in the battery case yet. And so then it'd be a process of like selling that one and, you know, I would like the battery case for the smaller phone because I think the whole idea is neat. So for me, I'll try it out. You know, it would need to be like really compelling. But the fact is like it would make the Max phone even bigger, even thicker, even heavier.
It does add a lot of bulk. Like it close to doubles the weight of the phone, I think. Like it's
And I go to bed a lot of times with my phone around 75% because, like, you know, I am working from my home office where I can charge on, you know, just put my phone down on the you know, wireless charger.
Yeah, like one of the biggest killers for, you know, an average person's battery is like on the commute, right? Like people just leave it in their bag.
Away from a charger too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, or you're at the office, but you're not allowed to plug it in. Like loads of people are like that. My parents are like that. Like my mum works in a call center, but she's not allowed to have her phone out pretty much at all. So it just sits in the bag and then drains down over the day, right? Like it's, but for us, like when we're in, you know, we're in home offices, we can just plug it in. It's not a big deal.
And like the weekends, you know, and travel, like those are situations where it's like, oh, this is what people have to deal with, you know? But for me, I thought about it. It's like, there's enough things here. I'm glad this exists and I think it's awesome. And I think if you don't plan on like changing your iPhone in 9 months or so, you know, less than that, then go for it. Even if you want to get the same size iPhone, it feels like it's risky that it won't fit the next phone because of some camera change, you know?
Yeah. I feel like the design will not be compatible.
Yeah.
A big reason for me buying it was like, I was kind of going to do a post on hands-on with a battery case as like a newcomer. And then also like using the XS case with an iPhone X,
because
that's still like a big question. You know what I mean? Like people just want to know what it's like. And I take up some close-ups of the speaker difference and stuff. And then reconsider after that. It definitely wasn't like I've been waiting for this for, you know, ever when the first leaks came out, I was like, oh, that was cool. But I wasn't like, I really want to buy one, you know, right away.
Yep.
We did see, just back on AirPower again, yet again, we did see Apple have another AirPower reference mistakenly appeared on the description for the iPhone XS battery case. I believe it appeared in the US as well, but was removed instantly. And then it stuck around on the Malaysian Apple store for a while.
Yeah.
And then got removed. And it specifically said that the XS battery case works with the AirPower wireless charging mat and other Qi certified chargers. And capital wireless charging mat was in capitals, as if that was the actual like full brand name.
I don't think this was,
people are like, clearly they wanted to release the battery case and the AirPower at the same time. I expect that the marketing description for this was written months and months ago, back when these battery cases were meant to be released in fall 2018, as we saw in the code leaks.
Right.
And when they were writing that, well, AirPower's out by the end of the year, so we don't need to worry, we can put it in here. And then obviously it gets delayed and AirPower's not out and this happens. Like, if it was a sign that AirPower's imminent, they wouldn't delete the reference. Like, they're only deleting it because it was a mistake.
You can't delete it from the paper manual, but you can from the Apple Store app where it appeared.
Yeah. Apparently there is no AirPower mentioned on the packaging for these cases, apparently.
Yeah, so that was a mistake that was not made. This is I'm glad this exists. So mine will arrive, and I'll probably like, it seems like you can, it's like non-destructive, like try it out and return it. So I think I'll just like try it out and like see, yeah, that's way too thick, it's like over the threshold for me. Or like, I mean, I could decide like, this is neat, I'll keep it and then just sell it, but it seems like such a pain, you know. And there's no way you're going to get back $130 from selling this thing in 9 months. So,
you could sell it in like a month's time
if it's like supply constrained, like, you know.
In my head, I'm like, I'll keep this case around. Then when AirPower ships in spring, I'll just get rid of it then. If you see what I mean, like, because I kind of want to use it. I kind of want to place it on the AirPower mat and like see if it works, or you know, see if the animation on the lock screen knows about the smart battery cases, stuff like that, like how it all interoperates with each other. Because if it's Qi compatible, clear, there's going to be hopefully integrations with it there. But after that, like, my kind of intrigue in the product kind of fades away, because I don't really have like a firm I need this in my life kind of use case for it.
I'm glad it exists, and it would have been kind of a bummer like to have the leaks happen and then it be so close to a product that never happened. And the turnaround time was like a little bit over a month, from the beginning of December to the middle of January. You know, here we are. It's a cool thing. I guess next week we'll have a little bit to say about like how using them has been. So I'll have one just for that purpose too. But like I said, I think mine's going to go back, just because I know I'm not going to have this phone, you know, at the end of the year. And, you know, it isn't like $30, it's $130. So it's not worth keeping around if I'm not going to keep it in the family. So, all right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You are
BZA May.
And you can also email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.